Welcome back to Customers Who Click, the e-commerce podcast for D2C brands. In each episode, we will look to answer one important question. What is the one thing brands should be doing right now to get customers clicking? Each guest will take us through actionable insights and real-life examples from brands excelling in the art of customer attraction. So whether you're looking to enhance your conversion rates, boost average order values, or extend customer lifetime value, this is the podcast for you. Visit customerswhoclick.com for all our past episodes and to connect with us. Now dive into the world of D2C e-commerce with us and unravel the secrets to keeping those customers clicking. Today's guest is the brilliant Tim Brown, a director of performance marketing at Huckberry and co-founder of Okana, a natural coffee alternative drink. Tim's got years of experience in understanding what makes customers tick, so I'm delighted to have him on the podcast. So Tim, tell us why customer insights, why does that interest you?
First of all, thanks for having me, Will. Really appreciate excited to be here. Maybe I'll give a quick background before we dive in. But yeah, like you said, I'm a co-owner of a coffee alternative brand named Okana. Okana is made from yerba mate and eight other superfoods and adaptogens. So it includes like lion's mane, reishi, ashwagandha, different things like that. And the blend of ingredients is great for energy, focus, gut health, immunity, things like that. So shameless plug, check out Okana, drinkokana.com. Yeah. that's kind of like a side hustle right now. And my full daytime job, like you said, like I'm the director of performance marketing at a company called Huckberry. And for those who are not familiar, Huckberry is a men's e-commerce retailer. So we sell first-party products, so D2C, and we also sell third-party products. And we span a couple different categories. So we sell clothing, footwear, everyday carry, so think belts, wallets, knives, etc., and home goods. So everything from candles all the way to furniture. And I've been there for 8.5 years and sort of built the performance marketing function from the ground up. And when I came in, I was the first hire. My goal was just to figure out if Facebook and Google could be a good acquisition source for the business, right? And being in a startup, like I wore a ton of different hats. So we didn't have a data team, a finance team, a tech team. And, I was building out like our first new customer model, our financial models, building dashboards for every team, different things like that. And things went really well out of the gate. And we started to scale up and sort of built a team underneath me. And now my team kind of handles all, paid marketing channels. So think paid social, Google, affiliate, influencer. We run TV, linear, CTV, catalog, programmatic ads, banking ads, things like that. And, Huckberry's been around for 13 years at this point, and I've been there for eight and a half of those years. And during that time, we've sort of 10x top line revenue, and my role has shifted pretty dramatically throughout that time period. I used to be really deep in the weeds and kind of the only channel owner, and now taking on a much more sort of strategic role in nature, kind of doing more like go-to-market planning, financial planning, budgeting, things like that, working with our brand marketing creative teams to kind of develop campaigns for our channels. And then, of course, working with my channel owners to sort of optimize scale and allocate resources across all of our different channels.
Yeah, sounds great. I mean, I've been there with the startup journey. Getting your hands into dirty with like everything that needs to be done, and then eventually moving into those more strategic roles where you get to actually not exactly sit back, but
right,
get that bigger picture of like focus on the bigger picture and the growth strategy rather than how your ads are performing like over the weekend. So what do you think is the one thing brands should be doing to get customers clicking?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, as I was thinking on this and preparing to come on this podcast, I had like 20 different routes that I thought about kind of going. And being a performance marketer by trade, like I thought about like, okay, like, how, maybe we talk about like optimizing the funnel, testing landing pages, like, optimizing for hook and hold rate and things like that. But I actually kind of want to like maybe step back and zoom out a little bit and kind of talk a little higher level about something that I think is incredibly important, but I think a lot of, especially smaller brands, kind of overlook a little bit. And I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to give you kind of a two-in-one here. So it's not one thing, but a little two-part. But the first thing is like understanding your customer, like actually digging in and like really understanding who your customer is and what they want from you. And then secondarily, like being able to use that insight to provide actual value to them, and not just like value in terms of product, but like product that, like content and value that is outside of just pure product. And you know, I'll go through each of these and kind of break them down in a practical way and kind of talk about how we use this sort of process at Huckberry. But I gotta stress, like, you know, developing a muscle in these two areas, right? Like customer insights and like actually thinking about the value you're adding for your customers is kind of how like the best brands kind of win long-term and at scale.
You know, I was just talking about our CRO methodology with someone just earlier, and we were talking about, you know, anxiety and motivation is quite a big part of it, and that all has to come down to research, right? You cannot know what information people need to know about your products and what's going to motivate them to purchase if you don't speak to them. But it requires it takes a lot of effort, right? It takes time, it takes effort. It does take a bit of experience, right? The customer research side is not, it's not a super quick and easy process, but it's worth it.
Yeah, and it's also not the sexiest process, right? Like, I think everybody wants to, especially smaller brands, you want to get in, you just want to start creating content, you just want to sort of put things out there and see what sticks. And I think there's validity to that. I think there's like a lot of validity to like speed and testing, and so I don't want to knock that at all, but like, especially as you scale up and trying to understand like, hey, we're doing all these different things, like what's actually working, what do people actually care about, what do they want to see from us, is incredibly important. And so I kind of think about it like, you know, like internal and external research. And, you know, like I think it starts with your product, right? And your product purpose, right? And so like, this is not necessarily customer insight, but like your product needs to be built with customer insight in mind, right? So I think that the insight from a marketer's perspective needs to come from like whoever's closest to the product. Sometimes this is the founder, sometimes it's like head of research or product development, whoever it is, right? Whoever's building this thing. So for us being like an apparel brand, you know, this comes from like our product designers, right? The people who are actually producing and developing these products, and the kinds of questions we're asking that we want them to answer is, you know, like, why did we make this thing? Like, what was the inspiration? Who are we competing with? Right? How is our product actually different? Right? Are we creating the same product that's just cheaper, or do we have like actual features and benefits and like reasons that this thing actually stands out in some way? Right? And then like more importantly, like how do our competitors position themselves and sort of where do we fit in the customer's life? Right? And then I think like, yeah.
So I was going to say like that why is so important. Like how... Yeah, but why have you done this? How is this product actually different? Because when the number of times you ask that question and people cannot actually explain why their product or why their business is different. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it's not. It just means maybe you haven't thought about it and positioned it in that way that makes it different. You know, I've talked before about how even though, you know, pretty much every category out there has hundreds, maybe thousands of competitors out there, right? There's pretty much no unique products in the market that literally have no competitors.
Right.
But there's still plenty of opportunity to talk about your product in a way which does make it stand out and does make it different. And I think a lot of that does come down to customer research.
Yeah, and not just the product, but your brand too, right? Like you can create a product for a very specific purpose and its intent. And then like, I think a lot of brands struggle to ask themselves that same question about the brand. Why do we as a brand exist, right? So why did we create this product? But then what, like, how do we serve our customers? And I think this kind of leads into kind of my next point here, which is like, what are customers actually saying about your brand? What are they saying about your product? And what do they actually think about you? Right. And you can do this in so many different ways. And like, some of it's very tricky and some of it's very sort of simple, but like customer reviews is a no brainer. Go look at what people are actually saying in the reviews. And don't just look at the good ones, right? Go look at the bad ones. What are people saying about you? Customer support, I think, is often overlooked, but like customer support is your front line. Like they're the people talking to your customers. Like what are the conversations that are being had? What are the things that people are running into, like problems or questions, right? social media comments, you got to be careful on the internet. Yeah. The internet's full of trolls, but you can always, there's some insight to glean in there.
You know, and this is something that's come up in customer interviews for us. People go to Instagram to check the comments, sometimes yeah. Facebook as well. They go and have a look at what comments are being left on your posts to see if it's positive or negative. Mm-hmm. Right? So if your customers are doing that, you need to be doing it so that you can go fix those problems, and you know your next few posts are going to be good. Just to touch on the review side as well, we do competitor analysis as well. So, you know, as long as you're looking at close, you know, actual close competitors, what are their customers saying about their products and their service? What do they like and dislike about that? And how can you use that information to improve as well? If everyone's saying they hate a certain feature of your mm-hmm. competitors' products, you probably don't want to have that feature on your own products either.
Yeah, exactly. And you can find this stuff out through surveys. And I think the one that, like, you know, people overlook way too often is just talking to your customers in person. Get them on the phone. Invite them to a happy hour. We do this quite a bit at Huckberry. We actually will throw happy hours and invite. So we're in Austin, Texas. So like we invite our VIPs to the office for a happy hour. We'll premiere new content or whatever it may be, and just get face-to-face like interaction with our customers. They get excited to meet us. We get to learn something about who they are. We get to see them in real life and just recognize it's not just people that look like me. It's, you know, all kinds of different demographics and people that are, you know, excited about it and sort of like using our products.
I think that's great. You know, actually, we actually did that. I did that once at a company I was at, one of the startups that I was at, and it was the company's first birthday, well, in the UK, not actually their first birthday. We ran it at the office of our PR agency, so we got a nice big swanky office, and invited all these people. And what I realized is one of the first moments I was like, CRO is my thing. That's what I want to do. I emailed and phoned up every single person who got invited and attended that event. And when you have those conversations, and unfortunately I couldn't actually attend the event on the day. We had to move it, and it got moved to a day I was busy. But people were at the event asking if I was there. Right. So even though I just had like a quick phone call with people to say, oh, we'd love for you to attend. And then I think I phoned people up again and said, you know, just want to confirm you're able to make it. People loved that, right? They liked having that connection with the brand and there being actual people right there. And yeah, it's something that not enough brands do. But I mean, there's a massive loyalty piece conversation to have about that. But yeah, you get your VIPs into that. You get not only happy customers, but you get all the insight and feedback.
Yeah, it's surprising how, you know, like our customers will come in and almost be like starstruck meeting our founders. And they're not even like the face of the brand. They're not influencers. They're nobody like famous or, you know, big in that sphere. But like, they're just like, oh man, like these are the guys, right? Or like, you know, those are the people who are on our YouTube channel. They're like, oh, you're the guy that I watch once a week on this content. And like they, you know, it's really cool to kind of have that in person. But you get to learn so much. You can dig so deep into, you know, questions like, you know, like to what you were saying, what do people love about our product? What do they hate about it? Like what are the most common questions they have, right? And you can get this through all these different formats. And I think you had a really good call. Like one thing that we've seen as an example here was like in our comments for one of our best-selling products is a wax trucker jacket. And we were seeing in the comments, like, where is it made? Where is it made? Where is it made? And one of the competitive advantages we have for that product is that like a lot of the competitors that are very similar have a very similar product, but it's all made in China. Ours is actually made in the US. And I don't know if this holds in the UK, but like people in the US love USA made messaging. And it can't be the only thing. You can't just sell a terrible product that's made in the US, but like it is a value add from like a messaging standpoint. And just it was super obvious that we were not getting that across. We weren't getting it across on the site, right on the PDP page. We weren't getting it across in the content. Like we just weren't talking about it, but it was a value add that we were just very easily able to add and sort of improve click-through rate and conversion rate.
Yeah, 100%. It's a thing here. What I'd be interested to learn how if whether this is different. I think the perception here in the UK is if something is made in the UK, it's not so much the kind of, oh, I want to buy something locally made or like so much. I think it's more there's a perception that it being made in the UK means it's quality.
Quality.
It's a much better quality because people know it's more expensive to produce these things here. Therefore, if you've gone to the effort of doing it, it's probably going to be a much better quality. Do you think that's the same thing in the US, or is the US maybe a bit more just because it's US, it's like, I guess, more of a patriotic thing?
It's probably a little of both, but I actually think it leans into exactly what you're saying. Like, if you see USA made versus, I don't know, Bangladesh or China or whatever it may be, right? You're going, you kind of inherently think like, oh, it's probably better quality. They probably use better materials. And like, yeah, this is not always true. Like, we actually do a really good job of vetting all of our sort of partner factories outside of the US for like, you know, ethical practices and different things like that. We have our people go there and do random check-ins to make sure everything is cool. But you also assume that like, hey, if it's a factory in the US, like we assume that like these people are being treated better, they're being paid good wages. And so I think it's a lot of those factors. But yes, quality is kind of the biggest thing, right? You stamp USA made, people think, okay, that's high quality versus the competitor who is the same price but is made in China. Why am I paying for a Chinese made product when there's one that's, you know, USA made that is the, you know, like same exact price?
Yeah. So I'm guessing like, so you found that out. What do you then do with that information?
Yeah, we start to develop content around it, right? We start to like incorporate it wherever we can, right? So in our messaging,
okay.
So this product lives in our welcome flow because it's one of our best-selling products. So now we're saying like, you know, like the flannel line wax trucker made in the USA, right? We're putting a stamp on the actual PDP page where it's like a tag that says made in USA, right? We're sort of like just leaning into that message a little bit more. And again, it never for us has never worked as the main message, right? There's got to be something else there. It is a value add, but yeah. If you're just like, oh, this jacket was made in the USA, like people don't care that much. And we've actually found very similar findings for things like environmentally friendly or sustainability. It's like it is a value add, but it is not the thing. It's not the only thing people care about. Like the product, the quality, the value needs to actually be there.
It's a fine balance, isn't it? You know, everyone's talking about, you know, sustainability is so important. You need to get that message across, and it obviously needs to come across as genuine. So you get some big brands who basically just stick this is a sustainable product logo on their page and that's it. And there's almost no other discussion of sustainability. And then you get some brands who go all the way the other side, the other end, and focus so much on that sustainability message that actually they forget to sell the product. And at the end of the day, the product is still what people want. Like you say, that sustainability is it's a value add, it's a plus point. But if the product doesn't do what I want it to do, and if I don't feel motivated to buy it, you know, that sustainability piece is a bit meaningless.
Yeah, and you go back to the first thing we talked about, the product purpose. Why did we make this thing? Like, how is it actually better, right? And I, you know, if you think about this for Ocana, it's a consumable. You're drinking this thing. So yes, it's vegan. Yes, it's organic. Yes, it's all natural. We do not use any chemical solvents. But if it tastes terrible, people will not consume it on a daily basis. And like, how do you get retention if they're like, yeah, I bought it because it's a cool product, but like it tastes terrible. I can't do this every day. I just can't drink it.
Yeah, I mean, and you didn't even mention the actual benefits of the product there.
Right.
Still need to be talked about, right? What's this actually going to do for you? That's, you know, there's like a hierarchy of information, isn't there, for it. You need to know what it is, what it does, or how it works, what's it going to do for you? And then you care about some of those other pieces of information, like was it ethically sourced? Is it vegan, which obviously only affects a portion of the population. So you got to then balance out, you know, which messages are the most important. I would say, obviously, for a consumable product, having a tag like vegan on it, the number of people who benefit from that tag being there, that information being there, is so much higher than the number of people who will be put off by that being there. Because there's always going to be people who complain about stuff like that on there.
Yeah, and I see this in consumables a lot. Like, I see, like, you look at a package and it's like vegan or organic. It's just like a list of like things that just almost sound like marketing messages. They don't, you know, like, I'm like, is that real? When I see USADA like organic certified, I'm like, is this even really? More like, I don't really know what any of this means. And you start to think about, like, you know, and the meat, you know, it's a whole different topic here, but like meat industry, like what is the difference between grass fed versus pasture, or, you know, like all these different terminologies, and you just don't know what it means anymore. So like, you've got to be able to cut through that clutter and like be able to tell the truth. But like, everything you're saying is absolutely right. Like, you've got to have the true product value. Like, the product needs to be good enough to stand on its own. And then, yes, of course, there's different messages that will apply to different people. So when we do this marketing, right, it's like, hey, we're finding out that there's different segments of our customers, right? There's like, for Huckberry, we have, you know, three different guys that like, from a fashion style perspective that we've got, right? So it's like, we have our Flint and Tinder guy, who's a little bit more heritage, Americana, rugged. We have our sort of Proof guy, which is another brand that we carry, Proof guy. So it's like, more active and like outdoorsy, right? And then we have our Welling guy, who's more like, it's like coastal surf kind of vibes. And like, you can sell all of these products to any one of them, but the messaging has got to be a little bit different, and they want to see different types of people, and they want to hear different kinds of things for those products.
Well, I imagine it's the same for Akana, right? You've probably got, I don't know, there might be 10 different angles that you can take for the same products that just appeal to different people. They're still going to get all the other benefits as well, but there's only one that they actually care about, and that's the one you market on. But if you don't do that customer research, you don't know what those are, and then your marketing becomes a bit more generic, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, like, one of the benefits of Okana is that, like, because it has yerba mate instead of like coffee has a big spike of energy, and it, you know, a big crash. And yerba mate is a little bit more steady of a stream. It's not as big of a peak, but it also is more slow release. At the same time, we have ashwagandha in there, which ashwagandha is largely used for like a sleep aid, because it's an adaptogen. So it actually like relieves your stress. It helps your body process stress better. So people use it in tandem with like melatonin and like other sleep aids. So our product is interesting, where like, it gives you energy, focus, clarity, you know, like gut health, like boost your immune system. But at the end of the night, you're not stressed. You're actually like, you can sleep better. So for us, it was like, what's the message, right? What do people actually care about? And like, of course, you got to go and test these things. But like, talking to customers, like, why did you buy this product? And it's very interesting for people to say, like, I'm sick of coffee because I get jitters. Okay, great. That's a message we can test. I'm sick of coffee because I can't sleep at night. That's a whole different message and a whole different concept that like, customers are saying, we buy this because at the end of the night I can sleep. And I can't do that when I'm drinking coffee at 2 PM. Just different people are like gravitating towards different messages, but we put up the same image, five of the same images with just very different copy, like one leading into focus, one into energy, one into sleep, and like, but it's the same visuals.
Literally different copy and maybe a different icon, right? But the rest of it is basically the same. And I think, you know, that customer research will teach you that there's not just that one thing as well, which is what I think some people tend to go to, you know, when they're looking at customer research. What is the most common thing people are saying? That's the thing we need to talk about. When in actual fact, there can still be those five different angles. Obviously, it depends, you know, who your audience is, what you're selling and stuff. What's your favorite method of getting these insights? You know, if you had to pick one and recommend one method for getting them, what would it be?
I think the easiest and fastest way, and like, I'm much more of an analytical guy. Like, I love getting in front of customers, but like, you have much more speed just looking at like quantitative data. And so like, one thing that we do a lot, like, I work very closely with our data team. We just like to dig and ask questions, right? So, you know, the customer can, and here's the other thing, like, the customer can tell you a lot of different things, but like, ultimately they vote with their wallet and their actions, right? So like you can learn so much by just like actually analyzing the data, but like asking lots of questions and then trying to like go explore and try and figure out how to answer those questions through the data. So like what messages have worked, what didn't work well, that's very easy from like a, let's just see what concepts are working on meta or subject lines or whatever that may be. But like, yeah, a couple other areas that we've explored that have led to really big insights, what products, and for reference, we have 5,000 plus products on the site at any given time. So we have a lot of SKUs to kind of work with, but like what products and categories actually lead to the best customers? Which products, if someone buys it on their first order, actually leads to a higher repeat rate and thus a higher LTV over time, right? And like this is not a Huckberry insight. It's not specific to us. Sorry, I don't feel bad saying this out loud, but this is kind of like an old school retail insight specifically for men. Pants is a very sticky category, and so the reason being is just like if a guy finds a pair of pants that he likes that fit him well, they look good, especially if he gets a compliment from a woman or something like that, right? He'll come back and buy 5 more pairs of the exact same pair of pants, maybe different colors, but just like he'll come back and buy the same pants over and over. And so like these little insights, and we've looked at all of our products, right? And like we've gotten down to like here's the best of the best. And that little insight just like led us down the route of like actually shaping our sort of product mix for our acquisition campaign. So like I said, we have 5,000 plus products, but we only have limited resources. And like, where do we focus our marketing? And so we want to showcase and like acquire customers on these best of the best products that are going to lead to sort of a higher return. These also tend to be our first party, like our actual products that we're producing in-house, because we're taking those same customer insights, we're looking at reviews. Oh, people hate the buttons, people hate the fit. Like we're altering all of these things based on customer data. So we're actually taking that, altering the product, and then we're able to kind of like push people towards that product. And because it's D2C, we don't sell this stuff wholesale. We kind of have a moat, right? If you like our Flint and Tender pants, the only place you're going to come buy 5 more pairs is from Huckberry. You can't just go to one of our competitors like you could if it were a third-party product.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know what you mean about... also, did you say it is specifically men who do that?
I couldn't tell you
that just that example.
I couldn't tell you if it's specific to men, but that's what I've heard in the marketplace. And I've asked women if they do this. Like, my wife does not buy the same pair of pants, but I own... 5 of the same jeans and 5 of the same chino, just because it fits and it works.
Yeah, it just wouldn't surprise me if it is a very, very common thing with men. I did the same, right? I finally found a brand that did trousers that fit and were comfortable. So I was like, cool, I'm just going to keep buying these. Like, why would I look at it anywhere else? Right? What's the point when I found the ones that I like? Same with kind of t-shirts. And what I'm wearing now, actually, it's true classic, right? Do you know them? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's been a while. You know, obviously there are some other good like t-shirts out there, but their marketing was obviously what drew me in the first place. You know, it's really good quality marketing. It talks about like what are you trying to achieve by wearing clothes, right? You know, it's not just functional. You still want to look good, and their marketing really targets that. And then it is a fantastic product. So again, I'm like, why would I go anywhere else when now I have a product that I know fits me, I know I'm comfortable with. So, you know, it's kind of job done.
Yeah. And when you can hook people in, it's very hard to acquire. Like it would be very hard for me to acquire you as a shirt customer, right, into Huckberry. But like if we can get you over that hump through that insight of you just kind of said it out loud. Right. I want a functional shirt, but I also want to look good. Right. And like, that's a very specific thing that you said. You did not say, I want to look trendy. I want to look fashionable. I want to look, you know, like high class. Like you're a very specific type of person that like very similar to our customer. We've done the surveys and like talked to them, and like our customer doesn't want to look trendy. They don't want to be on trend or fashionable. They want to be like put together, and they want to be comfortable at the same time. So like that directly leads to, you know, product insight. Like we need to develop product that is not super slim fit, that, you know, looks super trendy or like, you know, long curved hem tee. Like, we want something that is more classic and that like fits a certain body type because it's more comfortable. It's like, it shapes the product and then it shapes the messaging, right? We can't lean into super trendy topics and things like that. We have to lean into a specific type of message for that customer.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So just before we finish up, have you got like a big mistake from your career? If you could go back, you'd do something different?
Yeah, many things, I'm sure. You know, I think one of the biggest things that I think was kind of a big miss and failure early on in my career was I kind of fell into the trap of micromanaging very, very early on. And, you know, like I was a very young manager. I started at Hugberry. I was 24 years old and like things were scaling up very quickly. I was deep in these channels and I knew them like the back of my hand. And as I started to hire a couple of juniors underneath me, like I kind of forced myself into too many decisions. I didn't trust the team enough. I didn't let them have the freedom or the autonomy to kind of go test and fail and kind of learn things. And I didn't give them the freedom to try things that I didn't think would work, right? And it was kind of all like my way or the highway. And, you know, I got this feedback from my manager through like one of our review cycles. And, you know, like it was more of a punch to the gut to my ego more than anything. You know, like I know that guy, I've dealt with that guy, and I never wanted to be that guy. And so it was kind of a reality check for me. And I took it very serious. And, you know, like I started to be a lot more sort of methodical and thoughtful about like zooming in and out with my team and kind of allowing them to take risks and like things that I kind of thought wouldn't work. Just like, okay, let's let them try these things and like let them go out and explore. And like at the end of the day, like it's the only way that you can like operate and scale. You know, at some point, right? You just can't be in every room. You can't make every decision. You can't be a part of everything that goes on. And like, it's kind of helped me shape my sort of general leadership and management philosophy where like, it used to be that like, I'm here to kind of like pave the way and like guide the team and like kind of do that and like be, you know, go out there and be the frontier guy. And like, now I really think of myself as like a true resource for my team, right? Like I do want to protect them from outside forces and like influences that maybe don't make sense. I want to protect their time and their energy and their mental state. Right. But also like, I want to fight for them. I want to give them the skills and the knowledge and the resources, whether that's budget or tools or, I want to connect dots and like bring the right people in the room to make things happen. I want to knock down roadblocks and barriers and problems that they're having, right? Like I'm here to solve problems for my team so that way they can just go and do their best work. Like I want them to be smarter than me and bring me solutions, but like that won't be the case if I'm always in there trying to make the decision for them. And it's made my team much more solutions oriented, action oriented. They don't feel that they need to bring things to me. They have full autonomy to go optimize their channel. We're obviously like all aiming for the same goal, and I can step in and have a lot of technical prowess in all these channels. So I can step in when things maybe look off base, but I'm not coming in saying, hey, you need to do it this way. I'm coming in asking questions. Hey, what's going on? Why did we do that? What are the changes that we made that got us off track? You know, do we think we're going to get back on track, or is this a red flag moment where we need to like back up and like try something else?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I'm sure we've all been there. No one likes being micromanaged, but when you start to get into those positions, you are like, well, you know, I built this. I know how this works.
Right.
And it's, you know, it can be tough to let go. Well, I, amazing. This was so, so interesting, so insightful. So thanks so much, Tim. If anyone wants to reach out and find out more, what's the best way of doing that?
You know, find me on LinkedIn or Twitter. But yeah, I mean, check out Okana, drakeokana.com. Check out Hotberry. Love both brands. So yeah, feel free to connect in any way.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Tim.
Yeah. Thanks, Will.
Thanks for listening. That's all we have time for today. If you have any questions or would like to add to today's conversation, join me here on the podcast, sponsor the show, or work with me. Simply email will@customerswhoclick.com, visit our website, customerswhoclick.com, or connect with me, Will Lawrenson, on LinkedIn. But until next time, keep those customers clicking.